In Vietnam, I said, you know what? I need to do 8 hours a day. So in Vietnam, it was the first time that I got, you know what I did in Vietnam is I got a list of people who wanted to practice with me. I did the same thing in Vietnam. I put signs up everywhere. My phone was blown up with people who wanted to trade English for Vietnamese. And what I did was.
Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the show. First of all, it's really
thank you. Thank you.
And well, just first of all, why don't you tell us about your experience with languages? Like, you know, your LA failure, mm-hmm. like we all did, like yeah. successes or yeah, anything that you think is relevant.
Yeah, so a little bit about me. I've been studying languages, acquiring language actually, since I was in high school. So I officially started at 17, but when I was probably 10 years old, we had just a woman who worked for us, and because we had five kids, so we had this woman who came to our house every day, and she helped my mom. She helped my mom with cleaning and cooking and everything, and she was a Spanish speaker, and my mom spoke to her in Spanish, broken Spanish, and I was like, wow, this is fantastic. And so I would try to speak to her in Spanish too. So as a 10-year-old child, the first thing I learned was dos sandwiches y leche chocolate. Dos sandwiches y leche chocolate. And she would ask me, she would say this, she would say, ¿Quieres el pan tostado? And as a 10-year-old boy, I recognized that pan tostado means toasted bread. Mm-hmm. And I was like, sí. So at the age of 10, that was my first experience with speaking another language besides English. Was with this helper that came to our house every day and helped my mom with five kids. And I was just amazed I could say something and she would understand me. So that was 10 years old. Then when I was 17 years old, I got a job. My parents told me, you have to either study or get a job. And I didn't want to study. I said, I am not studying. I hate studying because, you know, from kindergarten through 11th grade, school was not for me. So I said, okay, fine, I'll get a job. I got a job at a restaurant in Southern California. It was called the Seafood Broiler. It was a seafood restaurant. It's not there anymore. The Seafood Broiler, I was 17. I was hired to be a busboy, a cook, and a fish cutter. I had to cut fish. So I was just a 17-year-old boy. They paid me something like $4 an hour back then. And it was full of Spanish speakers. So in the back of the kitchen, I was in the back of the kitchen. I was a busboy. I was a cook. I was a fish cutter. All of the people in the back of the kitchen, most of the people spoke Spanish. They were from Mexico, El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras in that order. Because in Southern California, we're so close to Mexico. So most of the Spanish speakers were Mexican. And then after that was El Salvador and then Guatemala and Honduras. And I became best friends with these people. Just best friends with them. And they took me as like a son and they taught me Spanish. So what I acquired, I didn't learn. I always tell people I didn't learn Spanish in school. I acquired Spanish naturally like a baby, like a child. And they taught me everything. They taught me the bad words. They taught me please and thank you. They taught me, can you give me this? And they were just wonderful people. We became best friends. And I carried a dictionary with me everywhere. So I had a dictionary, a Spanish-English dictionary, and I would just look up words left and right. And I was a cook, and they were a cook too, so we would cook together. And then I found this guy named Herbert Pacheco, Herbert Pacheco. I'll never forget this man. He was a young man like me. He was learning English, and I was learning Spanish, and we would go back and forth on words we didn't know. So he would, if he heard a word in English he didn't know, he would ask me to translate it. If I heard a word in Spanish I didn't know, I would ask him to translate it, or I'd look it up in my dictionary. So this went on every day or 5 days a week for a year. And we, after work, we went out. We drank beer together. We went to a couple parties together. Mm. It was just wonderful. And so after a year, I was fluent in Spanish. Everybody was like, whoa, ¿por qué tú hablas español con fluidez? I was like, trabajo con un montón de gente de México, Salvador, Guatemala y Honduras. Y somos amigos y vamos y tomamos juntos y no sé. So for me, it was just wonderful experience. These are language parents. I didn't know it at the time, but these were my language parents, and they took me under their wings.
Yep.
They told me stories about their immigrating to this country, the hardships in their countries, the families, and the fact that they were all sending money back to their families in their countries. I was like, wow, amazed. And, you know, the work they did to get here, they had to come illegally. 9 out of 10 of them were here illegally. And, you know, I took them as my brother. And so it was just a wonderful experience. And after that, you know, long story short, my mom said, you should try French. I took French. Because I spoke Spanish so well, I was just like, bam, I got it. I took French, and then I took Italian, and then I took Chinese, and then Vietnamese, and then Arabic, and I did Farsi. So altogether, I've done 8 languages in the last, I don't know, 45 years. I'm 55, so in 55 years, I've acquired 8 languages.
Mm.
And that's it. So I fell in love with Spanish first. Spanish is my first love. My second language is Spanish. I decided to be a Spanish teacher, a Spanish professor, and it's worked out really well. So that's my current career. I am a Spanish professor full-time, and I love it. I love every second of it. Actually, that's not true. I love it most of the time. So that's me in a nutshell.
Oh, that's my story. Yeah, I can see in that early experience, it was comprehensible input all over the place, and you were just getting exposed to the language. What, like 8, 9, 10 hours a day?
No, because I had to work, you know. So I did the math. I think it was about 1,000 hours. I think I did about 1,000 hours in the first year. So, you know, if you divide 1,000 by 365, it comes out to about 3 hours a day. Mm-hmm. So we were doing about 3 hours a day because we were working literally next to each other, hand in hand.
Right.
Hand in hand. We were partners. We were cutting fish, we were cooking, we were washing dishes, prepping, you know, vegetables, etc. together. So it was about 3 hours a day. It was about 1,000. I did about 1,000 hours in 1 year. And that was more than enough.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good estimation. You know? Yeah. I don't can take when it comes to languages like, you know.
Recently, I've discovered that Spanish, for an English speaker, Spanish only takes 600 hours. It really only takes 600 hours. So maybe it was 600 hours. Maybe it was just 600 hours, but it was definitely at least 600, possibly 1,000. Because even the summers, you know, I was practicing with these guys in the summers. We were hanging out. We were going to parties together. We were fishing together. We were doing stuff outside of work together. They were my friends and my workmates and my language parents.
Right. Yeah, it might depend on, I mean, it might take you 600 to get to a point in which you can start communicating naturally, but getting to 1,000 allow you to be even more fluent than that. Or depending on the input itself, you know, but it might be different, or the way you count it, right? Yeah. And I'm curious because after your experience with Spanish, when you started with French, Italian, and so on, did you try to replicate the experience right away, or did you realize that, okay, there's something in this way of learning? Yeah.
That's a good question. Wonderful question. You know, I took French right after I took Spanish, I took French, and it was okay because I was practicing with the students in the class. I was practicing with the teacher and the students in the class, and I was probably one of the top students in the class. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I wanted to acquire or learn French. My motivation was just through the roof. My motivation was 100%. It wasn't until I actually started to go to different countries. I'd been to 8 different countries. It wasn't until I thought to myself, you know what? I really need to ramp this up. I have to go to the country where that language is spoken. And I've done 8 different countries or 7 different countries. So it was the French. The first thing I did was I thought to myself, you know what? I'm going to go to France. So I went to France for 3 months. It was right after I started teaching in college. And I went for a whole summer. And I refused to speak English. I refused to speak English. Je ne parlais jamais l'anglais en France. Je parlais jamais en France. And I brought a little dog with me. I brought a dog. My dog Angie was my first dog many years ago. And that helps. C'est très mignon. They all wanted to say, c'est très mignon. They would say, "Ella quel âge? Ella quel âge? How old is she?" So it was this great prop to meet people. But, you know, I don't need props. They help.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did in France was, you know what, actually what I did is I went to the library and the bookstore. I went to the library and the bookstore and I put up ads. I put up little ads at the library and the bookstore in France saying, if you want to speak English, call me. I'll help you with your English if you help me with your French. And my phone was just blowing up. I had to go and take the ad off. So I found people to practice with. I found people to practice with. And in France, I did about 3 hours a day. So 3 hours a day for 90 days. You know, I was there for 3 months.
This is a
3 month. It wasn't a 1 month study abroad. This is 3 months.
Right.
So if you think about it, 90 days, 3 hours a day, it's about 270 hours of French. And I already had about 100. So let's say 400. I've had 400 hours of French. I'm very happy with my French after 400 hours. Very happy. Je suis très content avec mon français. Je suis confortable dans mon français. And, you know, because French has so many cognates, it's very easy for me to
speak French.
And French is a level one language also. Had I done 600 hours in French, si ça all dans français, my French would be perfectly fluent. Right now, I'd say it's advanced, low advanced French.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very happy with my French.
Yeah. Exciting.
So I replicated that for all my other languages.
Right.
So, long story short, I went to Italy. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to Italy. The same exact thing in Italy. The same exact thing in Italy. And then I said, I'm going to go to Vietnam. I did the same exact thing in Vietnam. And all these countries, I practice. You know, once I got to Italy and Vietnam, I said, you know what? I can't do 3 hours a day. I got to do 8 hours a day. So in Vietnam was the first time I did French, France and Italy. You know, I had fun, met a bunch of people, drank coffee, did about 3 hours a day. In Vietnam, I said, you know what? I need to do 8 hours a day. So in Vietnam, it was the first time that I got, you know what I did in Vietnam is I got a list of people who wanted to practice with me. I did the same thing in Vietnam. I put signs up everywhere. My phone was blown up with people who wanted to trade English for Vietnamese. And what I did was I had my three regulars and I would meet at the same restaurant. I had a 10 o'clock, a 12 o'clock, a 1 o'clock, and a 4 o'clock. And I had these boys and girls. They were just, you know, in their 18, 19, 20s. They wanted to practice their English. And of course they did. And they would come and sit down and we would speak Vietnamese all day. And I would trade English for Vietnamese. And I got a tutor and I paid for a private tutor. So in France and Italy, I actually took classes because, you know, France and Italy are a little expensive.
Right.
Vietnam, super cheap. Love Vietnam. I just got a private tutor and I paid a private tutor. And we did about 2 or 3 hours a day with my private tutor. So in Vietnam, I was doing 8 hours a day. It worked great, and I loved it. But I was only in Vietnam for 4 weeks. It was during a Christmas or a vacation. So Vietnam, I did 4 weeks, 40 hours a week. That's 160 hours. I did another 50 hours of Vietnamese here. So I did about 200 hours of Vietnamese. Now, Vietnamese is a level four language. It's not going to take 600 hours.
Right.
It's going to take around 1,100 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I did 200 hours of Vietnamese, 250 hours of Vietnamese. Woof, I got a lot more left. And Vietnamese is an extremely difficult language. I still speak Vietnamese every day. I just say hello, goodbye, how are you, and things like that. So that was Vietnam. And then, you know, I replicated the same thing from Vietnam. I went to, I think after Vietnam was Egypt. So Egypt I did 40 hours a week. I feel like I did 50 hours a week in Egypt. For 3 months. Plus, I did 300 hours of Arabic in here. So I did, and then I did, you know, I did Mexico and Spain. In Spain, I did a master's degree in Spain. So that counts too. So altogether, it was 6 or 7 countries. And so my eighth language is Farsi. Farsi, when I started Farsi, I had an Iranian girlfriend, wonderful woman, love her, missed her terribly. And we did Farsi. She was in Orange County, California. We have many Farsi speakers.
Right.
And I met her and she was wonderful. And I hired a private Farsi tutor and I did, I don't know, 200 hours of Farsi. And after doing Arabic, Farsi is a walk in the park.
Mm-hmm.
Farsi is so easy. Arabic is so difficult. So once I said, see, it's like, what? You have one pronoun, un? Your verbs don't have gender? Oh my God. It's the easiest language I've ever acquired. So I'm very happy. Farsi, I've let it go. You know, I could probably speak 10 minutes of Farsi, and that's fine. You know, that's the groundwork. Yeah. You don't practice, you lose it. And that's perfectly fine. I know when I meet Farsi speaking people here in Orange County, which I do almost every day, I speak to them in Farsi. They're amazed. I love it. And if I were to make friends that spoke Farsi, my Farsi, I would get those language parents. I would find language parents and just, you know, my Farsi. And it's okay that I'm losing my Farsi. It's okay that I'm losing. Oh, China. I forget about China. China, I did the same thing. I went to Dalian, China, 3 months in China, 40 hours a week in China. I had my regular trades in China. I had private tutor in China. Same thing. So those are my six or seven countries. So that's it. That's all my eight languages now. So I've done eight so far, and I'm very happy with all of them. I'm losing all of them. I'm losing every language I speak, and that's just the brain. That's just the brain works. I'm losing my English every day. I figure, how do you say that in English? I know it's Spanish. I just don't know it in English, and it's perfect. And I'm perfectly fine. I'm not fluent in seven or eight languages. Mm-hmm. I'm fluent in two or three, and I'm perfectly happy with that.
Right, right.
I'm semi-fluent in seven or eight, and I'm happy with that.
Right, right. Yeah, I always talk about it that I'm perfectly fine with some of the languages that I'm learning, just getting to a point in which I can understand native content, for example. Like, I don't need to get to native, like, level for right? Yeah. But it's going to be tough.
That native fluency, oh my God, native fluency. Oof. I don't even know if it's possible. If you lived in the country, absolutely, you're going to acquire native fluency unless you live in the country. I mean, if you're married to a native speaker, yeah, but unless you're married to a native speaker or you live in the country, I don't think anybody can attain native fluency. I probably will never attain native fluency in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
I move there or marry it. Even if I married a native Spanish speaker, I probably still wouldn't speak natively. We would speak English a lot.
Right. No, I mean, when I said native, like, I mean, like, a high level. Like, for example, with my English, I can use it in any situation, in any way. I can, you know, I can give keynotes in English. I'm fine with it.
Yep.
But what I mean is, in some of the other languages, I'm fine just getting to a point in which I can understand, you know, YouTube videos, documentaries, books, whatever it is. It opens up a world of opportunities just with that.
Absolutely.
And... yeah, and to add to what you said, and the good thing right now is that obviously if you can do what you did, that's an amazing way to go about it. But right now you can, you know, through apps and watching videos and so on, you can do it from your own house, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And because for example, that's what I'm doing with German now. Like, I've been getting exposed to it for a while. And now, like, a couple of weeks ago, I decided to start a sort of an experiment, but I'm loving it. I'm getting exposed to German for 3 hours a day.
What app are you using for German?
I'm not using any specific app. I'm using mostly YouTube videos. So I've been...
Okay.
I've been getting exposed to German for a year and a half, couple of years through comprehensible input videos, YouTube videos, and so on. So I've gotten to a point in which I don't speak German yet, but I can understand quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I'm just watching, you know, things that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
And because I've been doing it for a couple of years, now I can understand many more things, and I can get exposed for 3 hours and not get tired because I enjoy it, right? It's not like I'm watching cartoons for 3 hours a day. I might get tired of that, right? But
there's a new what's a good word to call it? A wave or a new experiment going on in language acquisition today. There's a lot of people who are acquiring languages without people. No people.
Right.
So I belong to a Facebook group called Language Learning Without Pain. You can look them up. They're a wonderful group.
I'm on it.
Yeah. You're on it. Okay. That's how we probably met. So these are people who are specifically acquiring languages for the most part, without people.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, you're acquiring languages without people.
Right.
So they're dedicated to YouTube videos and really good apps. I'll say right now, the only app I know of which is good is called LingQ.
Yeah.
Like Q. Steve Kaufman runs this app, and I have a lot of respect for Steve Kaufman. He's another polyglot such as myself. So if you're going to use any app, I would go to LingQ, L-I-N-Q. But for me, that's so bizarre to acquire languages without people. I can't, I could not do it. I won't do it. You will never see me watch Farsi videos on YouTube. I'm going to acquire Farsi because I'm going to go on YouTube and acquire Farsi. Now, if I lived in Iran and I had to acquire Farsi quickly, or I was going to get a job in Iran or work in Iran or, you know, go to the embassy in Iran, then yeah, I would probably spend as much as I could before I go there using these videos. But to me, that's really weird. I would never do it. And I think the reason is, I've mentioned this on a Facebook site before, I think most introverts like this. If you're an introvert, you don't talk to people all the time. Naturally, you're not as outgoing as I am.
Mm-hmm.
Then this is okay. You're going to use YouTube videos. You're going to use an app like LingQ. You're also going to read. Now, reading is so super important. I always tell my students this on the first day. If you're going to get an app or you're going to use YouTube videos, please augment that with reading. Because if you could take my class and read, I think if a student takes my class for 85 hours and reads for 85 hours, I mean, that is like the holy grail of language acquisition. If you take a class for 85 hours and you read the same amount of hours, that's it. And that is key. And I could do it. I could take German and read German. But you have to read things that you understand 90%. I've gone to several workshops.
Yeah.
Karen Rowan, who is one of my favorite Spanish teachers, she has her own business called Fluency Fast, another good website for people who want to acquire languages. I don't work for her, by the way. She gave a talk once where she did a lot of research. Oh, she didn't do it as a Japanese teacher in Japan. And they decided that the sweet spot is 90%. So if you're going to do reading in a second or third language, in a new language, you have to understand 90% of what you're reading. Otherwise, you're not getting the best benefit. You'll get some, but the spot is 90%. So in my advanced Spanish class, in my Spanish 3 and my Spanish 4, they read for 10 minutes every day. So if you're one of those people, if you're an introvert, you just want to take a language, please augment it with reading. I don't need it. I'm not an introvert. I'm a super extrovert. So if I take a language, if you tell me, Jeff, I want you to take, let's say Portuguese. Jeff, we need you to learn or acquire Portuguese. You're going to Brazil next year. I'm going to make as many Brazilian friends as I can. If you tell me, Jeff, I want you to take German. I want you to take German because I want you to acquire German. I'm going to say no. I'm going to say, look, I don't have any German friends. I live in Southern California. There's just not a huge German community. I'm just not interested. So for me to take a language, I have to be able to practice the language. So you're going to say, we want you to take Arabic or Indonesian. I'd say, okay, well, I live in Southern California. I'm going to hear a lot more Arabic than Indonesian. So I always choose my languages by, am I going to be able to practice them?
Right.
So number one, am I going to be able to practice? Number two, can I make friends who speak that language? And then number three, can I get to that country easily? So yeah, Danish is a wonderful language. Norwegian are wonderful languages, but I'm just never going to use them. So
right.
I'm sorry, I'm just not interested. I'm interested in Korean, Tagalog, and what else? Farsi and other languages that are here in Southern California.
Right, right. No, it makes sense. It makes sense. Like, I'm more of an introvert, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm fine with combining both. For me, it's just about, so I live in Poland now, so I could have access to German people, of course, but I don't know, it's easier for me to get exposed to Polish on a daily basis. And then when I'm home, I'm just going to listen to German. So I get to a point in which I can start using the real word in a more efficient, because I don't want to look at people in those terms. But, you know, I can get to a point in which I can communicate, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, to me, it's a combination of both. But I'm also, the thing about watching YouTube videos or reading at home is that it depends 100% on me, right? On how much time I want to put in. I'm not meeting anybody who's going to put our meeting off because of whatever, you know. Of course, there's all these little things that are not really that problematic, right? But I know the fact that I can control the process completely, it helps me, right? Because I can do it every day and without depending on anybody else, right? But obviously, the ultimate goal is to be able to communicate in the language. So, I'm fine with both, but that's my approach. Mm-hmm. And I'm also curious about, because I've seen some of your videos and you talked about it with your experience in Vietnam, France, and so on, that you've done a lot of language exchanges, right? And you've have you done crosstalk a lot or what?
I'm super about crosstalk. I know crosstalk because of the Facebook group that we belong to. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what crosstalk is because I don't really do at this point. I don't do any exchanges anymore. I'm not working on any languages right now. Okay. So right now, all my languages are on hold. I'm on a hiatus, if you will. Mm-hmm. So do you want me to talk about how I do exchanges or do you want to talk about? Okay, so exchange. I'll just talk about exchanges. I mean, exchanges are wonderful. In fact, my friend Steven said I should write a book on exchanges, just language exchange. I've done thousands and thousands of language exchanges. I love language exchange. I just love it. Basically, language exchange is super easy. It means you trade your language for somebody else's language. And me being an English speaker, as a native English speaker, oh my God, I have a huge advantage. Just the fact that I was born an English speaker gives me a job. Advantage in the world. I'll just throw that out there. But for language exchange, I mean, I'm an English speaker. I could get online right now. I could go to the international center of my school and find people who want to practice their English or want to acquire English. So the way I used to do it is I would put up posts. I would put up signs at the library. I put up signs at the school where I teach. I'd put up signs at the international center. That works. I used to put ads in Craigslist, but we don't really have Craigslist anymore. Facebook is my favorite. So right now, Facebook is my favorite place to go. So if I go, like when I went to Egypt, my last big language was Arabic. When I went to Egypt, I joined the AUC, the American University at Cairo. And I just joined their Facebook group. Mm-hmm. And then I post, I'm an American living here in Cairo. I want to trade English for Arabic. And it just exploded. I mean, I had to take the post down in 10 minutes. I had 20 responses in 1 minute, which is normal. You know, people want to practice what they're learning or what they're acquiring. So I took the post down. I made some dates. I met some wonderful, wonderful people. And I traded English for Arabic. I did the same thing in all the countries, including Spain. You know, many years ago, including Spain, I traded English for Spanish. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mexico. I've done it in Mexico. You know, I've done it in places where I don't even need to do it. I've done it in Mexico just to make friends. It's a great way to make friends. They're wonderful. Language learners are wonderful people.
Right. No, that's true.
It works great. I've got to the point where I just hire tutors. You know, because if you think about it, if you're going to trade an hour of English for an hour of Farsi, you're going to be spending 2 hours. But if I could just hire a Farsi tutor, which is what I've been doing, you know, I'm at the point where I can afford to hire a tutor. Mm-hmm. For a young person, you know, you might not be able to afford to hire a tutor and you just do trades all day. Plus, I have a full-time job. So it works perfect. Young people, they trade. And then, old people like me, we just hire tutors if we can. So yeah, trades are awesome. I love trades. I've done them in every language I speak. You name it. Vietnamese, Chinese, Arabic, Farsi, Spanish, Italian, French. I've done trades in every language. Now, the only problem with trades is a lot of people say, I've done a video on trade. I did a really good YouTube video on trade, which has got a lot of views. You have to bring pictures. bring a magazine with pictures, because 9 times out of 10, if you don't bring anything, you're going to run out of things to talk about. Also, if you do trades, please time them. Please time them. I have a friend who lives in Taiwan. I won't say his name. He lives in Taiwan, and I spoke to him. He came back for Christmas, and I said, how are your trades going in Taiwan? How's the Chinese going? And he said, not good. He goes, yeah, it's not going good. I'm like, wow, what's the problem with the trades? And he goes, we always speak English. I'm like, dude, we always speak English. You're supposed to train. So I always set my timer. And a lot of people will say no. A lot of people will say, no, no, we don't need to set a timer. I say, yes, we do. We need to set a timer. And they say, I say, should we do English first or Chinese first? And they say, oh, no, Chinese, please. Let's do Chinese first. I say, no, we're going to flip a coin. We're going to flip a coin. In fact, I have an app on my phone, a coin flip. We flip a coin, heads English, tails Chinese, and we just do that. And we do an hour of Chinese, an hour of English. But if you don't know the people, I would say do a half hour first.
Okay.
Half hour Chinese, half hour of English, because the vibe might not be there. You might not like the person. That's fine.
Yeah, true.
Oh, that's how it plays.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I really like what you said about making friends that way, because usually I tend to think about it as a way to improve your language skills or your language knowledge, but it's a great way to meet people as well. It's actually simple, but I never thought of it that way. Yeah. And also, so you said that you talk for half an hour or an hour, but have you done it in different levels? With Vietnamese, for example, did you start trading languages from scratch, or how do you actually go about it? Meaning,
yes,
go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. So in Vietnam, I wasn't using pictures yet.
Okay.
It wasn't until I got to China. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I did Chinese. I started using pictures. I started bringing magazines with me for things to talk about. So Vietnam, and actually a lot of time in China, it was in China that I started using pictures. So half the time in China, I would just go and speak freely, speak about family, friends, work, travel, food, religion, death and dying, marriage, you name it. You could just look around, work. There's a guy working next to you, talk about work, talk about whatever you want. So in Vietnam and China and France and Italy, we just talked about just open-ended things. But my French and Italian were very good, and my Vietnamese and my Chinese were so. Arabic and Farsi is when I started bringing magazines. It was my magazine. And I brought a magazine to every trade, because what you want to do is you're going to run out of things to talk about. A lot of times students run out of things to talk about. So what I do is bring a magazine, open that magazine, and talk about the magazine. Or my favorite are children's stories. I bring children's stories, and I have them tell me the story in my target language. But I never have them translate. Never have them translate, because most of the words in a children's story are very difficult. Very difficult. You think, oh, I'll just read a children's story. No, you won't. It's just way too difficult. I think most children's stories are written for a child who is about 6 or 7 years old. And I believe 6 and 7 year old children have about 2,000 to 3,000 words in their head.
Right.
As a beginning Arabic student or a beginning Farsi student, there's no way I have 2,000 to 3,000 words in my head.
Right. Yeah.
And
they use that sort of literary language, like once upon a time, they live in
Once upon a time, there was a fairy who was a wonderful young woman, maiden, or whatever they want.
And they lived happily ever after. So they use expression we don't really use in daily life.
Not good for a beginning language student.
Right, exactly. So when it comes to Farsi and Arabic, were you more quiet than the others? Meaning, like when you were speaking Farsi, was the native speaker speaking most of the time, or were
no? Oh, good question. No, it's always the same. My acquisition is always the same. I always want my language parent, my trade, my partner speaking 90% of the time. 90% of the time. It's all about listening. It's all about listening. If you're a language student out there, you want to do 90% listening, 10% speaking.
Sorry.
You know that language is a product of input, not output. So speaking is basically a waste of time. It's fun.
Yeah.
We do it all the time. I'm doing it right now. It's like baking. You know, when you bake a cake, you spend hours and hours and hours and hours baking the cake. And then what do? You eat the cake. Speaking is the eating of the cake. When you're speaking, that's the fun part. That's the fun part, is the speaking. But it takes hours and hours and hours of listening. So every one of my languages, I don't know how I discovered this. Maybe I just remembered my experience at the restaurant, my Mexican, Salvadorian, Guatemalan, and Honduran friends doing most of the speaking. It just naturally occurred to me that, hey, I need to listen. I need to listen. I need to listen. So, you know, I hate to say it, but a lot of people I know who speak languages poorly are big talkers. In my opinion, they talk too much. And I've watched people. I took a Chinese class. I took a Chinese class for fun. And I think the people who were the biggest talkers did the worst. They did the worst because they're just not natural listeners. Yep. They want to get their point across. They want to talk, 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 talk. And maybe they're just super, super, super extroverts. And, yep, you know, language class, you almost need to become an introvert in the class.
Yeah.
Extrovert is great, but you need to come back and be the introvert in the class.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So it makes a lot of sense, actually. And I think that's where the idea of crosstalk comes into play as well. So it's basically the idea of, like, I explained it many times, but it's basically two, like, language exchange, like you're talking about, but throughout the entire hour, 2 hours, you know, however long it is, both people are speaking in the native language the whole time.
Okay.
Right?
I do the same thing.
Okay. So instead of 90-10, it's 100-0, right?
Whoa, 100-0?
But meaning that, for example, if now you're going to speak English the whole time and I'm going to speak Spanish the whole time, right? So we're talking about a certain topic, but when it's my turn to speak, I'm using Spanish, but you're replying English.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
All right, let's pretend. I'm a little confused. Okay. You speak Polish. Mm-hmm. You speak Polish. You live in Poland.
Yeah.
I speak. Okay, let's say we're doing a Polish-English crosstalk. You want to learn English? I want to learn Polish.
Right.
So we flip a coin. Let's say Polish for the first hour. Okay. So who's going to speak Polish? You're going to speak Polish, or I'm going to speak Polish, or we're both going to speak Polish?
Yeah, perfect. So no, the idea is the entire hour, we're going to speak both languages. So like in a normal conversation, whenever it's your time to speak, you're using English. Whenever it's my time to speak, I'm using Polish or Spanish or whatever.
Okay, I get it.
You know, by realizing that your answers make sense, I know that you understand what I'm saying, and vice versa.
Interesting.
No, I mean, so instead of half an hour in Polish, half an hour in English, it's an entire hour with both languages.
I like it. I like it. I like it. I think I've tried it once. I'm sure I tried it once.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So you would speak Polish 100% of the time, and I would speak English 100% of the time. You call this crosstalk.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it. Okay, maybe next time I do a language or acquire, maybe if I jump back into Farsi, I'll do that. Sounds interesting. I don't know if I'd like it or not. I've never tried it. I mean, I've tried it probably once.
I think you would. It's a bit weird at the beginning because when the other person speaking in English, in your case, my natural reaction is to reply in English, right?
Yeah.
But once you get used to it, it's fine because the good part about it is because you know you're going to reply in your native language, which you don't have any issues with.
Yeah.
When the other person is speaking, you're fully focused on what the other person's saying. You're not thinking about what you're going to say next. Right. So it's more relaxing in that way. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. I'll try it.
Yeah. And I have one last question about the language exchange idea. What was it hard to convince the other person to do it the way you like to do it, or where?
Yes, that's a very good question. So if you do language exchange, if I do language exchange, 90% of the time, people want to translate. They want to translate. They want to teach me grammar.
Mm.
They want to correct me. They want to become these traditional language teachers that I don't want.
Exactly.
So I always warn people. So whenever I get with a language exchange person, I always say, look, we're going to do language exchange, but number one, please only speak the target language. Mm. Only speak, let's say Farsi. Farsi is my most current language. We're going to do Farsi for a half hour. We're going to do English for a half hour. So during the Farsi time, only speak Farsi. So speak 100% of Farsi, unless it's an emergency. You know, if you have an emergency, if I have an emergency, if I get stuck, if you get stuck, then sure, I'll speak English.
Right.
Number two, please don't teach me any grammar.
You
don't want to hear any grammar. You know, don't tell me if it's a girl, we say it this way. If it's a boy, we say it this way. If it's three people, we say it this way. Because... I'm like, no, you know, I don't need that. I just need lots and lots of listening. So please don't teach me any grammar. And then number three, don't correct me.
Mm.
It's probably the correcting thing that people find the hardest.
Yep.
They find that, oh, I have to correct you because we correct people. No. And then I just say, look, there's a study by John Truscott. John Truscott is an English teacher in Taiwan. He's done extensive study on this. And they've found that correction doesn't work. It's just a waste of time. 99% of the time, people say, okay. 1% of the time, they say no, and they continue to correct me. And then I just don't have a second date with these people.
Fair enough.
Yeah. And then I tell them to draw. I'm like, let's draw. I draw. When we don't understand something, I draw until they understand, until I understand, or I point to stuff or a gesture, and then I go, oh, okay. And then if... still no comprehension. We're both stuck. I say, let's just speak English. And oh, okay. And then like once in Vietnam, with my Vietnamese teacher, I was like, what are you talking about? And she said, I'm talking about the import and export duties in the United States and Vietnam. And I'm like, import, export duties? What are you talking about? I'm talking about cats and dogs. You want to talk about import, export duties? So you really need to bring the conversation way, way down.
Right.
Colors, clothing, physical appearance,
like
cars, boats, dogs.
It has to be comprehensible. Yeah, like I was just thinking that as you spoke that I don't even know how to talk about that in my native language, like import, export. So I just can
talk.
But yeah, true. Yeah, that's... sometimes that's probably the hardest part, like getting convincing people about doing it this way, because unfortunately we've all had the same type of experience
in
languages in school, high school, and so on. So it takes a while. But yeah, I want to ask you if you can send me the research that you just talked about. I can include it in the description.
Sure.
I'd love to read it myself, of course, but in case anybody is interested. Mm-hmm. Okay. And any final message for language acquirers out there?
The language learners, language acquirers. I don't know. I guess, you know, just have fun. You know, I've discovered that the more fun I have, even in my current class and my current teaching, if I just have fun and not think about, you know, what's my goal. If I get rid of goals and just have fun, it usually happens naturally. That's just in my own teaching. As a language student, you know, I have no goals. I have fun and I know it'll come. It's basically all about hours. You know, people like to tell me, oh, you're good at languages because you speak 8 languages. I'm like, no, I'm not. I did 800 hours of Arabic. 800 hours. Show me somebody who's a non-native speaker, a foreigner who's done 800 hours of Arabic.
Right.
You won't find it. Very few. That's why I speak Arabic. I speak Arabic because I did 800 hours of Arabic, not because I'm good at languages. I mean, it helps. You know, it's like, you know, exercising, you know, calories in, calories out. You want to be skinny, you have to have enough, you have to take in fewer calories and burn more calories. Language acquisition, exactly the same. You just need tons and tons of hours in, tons and tons of hours in, and then that's how languages occur.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like that. I like that no goal.
yeah.
Way to go about it. Yeah, I like it.
Mm-hmm. Hours are my goal. My only goal is hours.
Right.
My only goal is hours in. Hours in is my only goal.
Yeah.
Get to it. You'll get to it. We'll get to it.
Yeah. Then, as long as it's comprehensible, it's yeah. How much time you're putting in. Is that quote unquote simple? Yeah. Exactly. Okay. So yeah, thank you so much, Jeff. And yeah, I'll leave the link to your YouTube channel or whatever you want me to link to.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I've just started doing TikToks.
Oh.
So I'm putting all my classes on TikTok. All of my classes. Right now I teach 3 Spanish classes, mm-hmm. 2 beginner Spanish and 1 Spanish, I guess we call it Spanish 3, third semester Spanish. And TikTok is, you know, people are not watching YouTube the way they used to.
Right.
So now TikTok. So TikTok, Instagram, and my podcast, all 3 I'm using.
So you're chopping those videos for YouTube? Like for TikTok, like little
bit? Yeah. What I do is I put all my homework, all my stories, my homeworks, my listening activities. I put the same video, TikTok, Instagram, and podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So my students get to choose. I don't know which they prefer, but they can do TikTok, Instagram, or podcast, and that's their homework.
Nice. Yeah. Yes, I'll leave all the links down in the description.
Awesome.
And yeah, it's been a pleasure, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I can't wait to hear this podcast. I'm going to share this with my students. So as soon as you finish it, you know, a week, 2 weeks, whatever, just send me the link and then I'll leave it for my students. I'll go make them do it. I've gotten to the point, I don't make students do anything,
mm-hmm.
you know, really dull. It's just, it just doesn't work, you know?
Yep.
So it'll be optional. This
yeah.
This podcast will be optional for them to listen to.
Yeah, yes. Spark their interest, and they'll do it themselves if they're interested.
Yeah, exactly.
But if they're not, there's nothing you can do, right?
Nothing.
It may actually be that those little cases in which, or those, you know, little cases in which they might actually be interested, but because you force them to do it, they lost the interest.
No, that's
even more dangerous than that. Yeah.
That's a different subject. I'm motivated.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I will say this. The most important thing about language acquisition, the most important thing is motivation. How motivated are you? It's number one.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, enjoying every single minute of it, meeting people and watching videos, that's when it comes into play, because it's way easier to be motivated when you're having fun, right?
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
You're very welcome. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks so much for watching this interview. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it was helpful for you. And if you want to know more about language learning, language acquisition, like, you know, what's the best way to learn a language, ideas for language learning, the best resources at different levels, here you can find the whole playlist with all the interviews I've done so far with different researchers, teachers, polyglots, and so on. And finally, right here, you smash this guy right in the face to subscribe to my channel. I really appreciate it, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye.